The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Here we go. Welcome back to K4 Wins with Gatekeeper for Left Hand Corner, Las Vegas Sun, Chief Editor, Handicapper, just fantastic. Wins awards up and down the lines here year in and year out. Right below it, Kai Gregory, who's been working both sides of legend now for nearly four decades, knows what he's doing. He's done all kinds of gambling shows and handicap shows. And of course, we've got Kip Kiefer, who's the Chief Executive Director of the Birmingham Racecourse and Casino, a good friend of mine, does a multitude of shows on terrestrial, and not to mention Tony Curry Radio, and of course the television shows as well, and also has something to say about college football and knows what's going on. Let's get into it, gentlemen. First of all, what's our numbers so far this week? We got some great playoff games to get into here. We're going to knock them all down and have some plays, but how is our play so far this week?
3-0 yesterday, last week, 25-15, 103-62 last month, and year to date, 1,113 wins, 664 losses, 32 pushes.
That is a lot. That was, if you say 32.
You lost 664 times? Good grief.
I don't know if it's a more amazing that we've won 1,000 games or we've had 32 pushes. That should tell you how close we are to the numbers. Case, let's go Alabama, Oklahoma. I know a lot of people watching this show live later on tonight. It is the second rematch. By the way, did you realize that no team has ever defeated Alabama twice in one season? It has never happened in the history of Alabama football. I did not know that. I found that out earlier today. I had to look it up, make sure it's right. So no team has never defeated Alabama twice in one season. Oklahoma coming off an FBS best 43 sack season. Obviously, that defense is great. But their offense hasn't scored more than two offensive touchdowns in a football game since October 25th. Oklahoma has a hard time scoring. Their defense is fantastic. Can they get Bama again later on tonight?
Hold on. I mean, before we go with this bullshit stat of the team hasn't been beat twice.
I mean,
how many teams have they actually played twice in a
very few
in 100 years?
No, I think it's like 22 times, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, they've had some bowl games, stuff like that. They've had some playoff games. I think maybe four or five times they've replayed Florida, I think, during a regular season. So it's happened.
It's a stat that really matters.
Yeah, like your stats matter. Like, okay, give me the team that has the lowest scoring in basketball. What? Who the hell cares?
Hey, that's why it's called a Tony Curry useless fact.
And that's why I say it. And people right now are going to go, do you realize Alabama's never lost? Now, you say that, and you watch, they'll lose tonight, and then we don't have that stat anymore. You don't have to worry about it. Case, continue, sir.
Yeah, no, I got to give you credit. I'm very interested. I don't think it matters, so I agree with Kai on that, but I am interested. I would think they've played teams enough twice that they should have lost one of them. And if it's 22, that's a pretty good sample size. So, yeah, I find it interesting. I'll give you back on that.
That's all I'm here for is interesting.
Not a totally useless
stat. You can jerk off during my stats if you want to, Kai. Knock yourself out.
Would it play into my handicapping? Absolutely not.
Of course not.
Any of the people that were contributed to that streak.
Does it make any difference that Pittsburgh has won in 22 straight Monday Night Football games in a row? Well, yeah, because they just won their 23rd, and some people want to use that trend. That's fine. It doesn't mean anything, but it's certainly fun to talk about.
That one's a little wild, and maybe you could argue means a little more because Tomlin's been there for, I think, the whole streak.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, could be.
But still probably something I wouldn't factor in.
I know this game is got you fickled a little bit. That's why I started with you, because this is kind of a hard game to handicap.
Yeah, well, I guess not really, though. If you listen from the first time the matchups were announced, I said my number on the game was Oklahoma, the slightest of favorites. I made it 52%, basically 48%. And that's exactly where the market has settled. We saw some money come in on Alabama at first. I think Alabama, they might have gotten to two at some places, but kind of 1.5 across the board. And then as the limits have gone up, as the week has gone on, Oklahoma's taken a little bit more money and settled exactly where I think it should be. I mean, I just think this is kind of the ultimate coin flip. There's some questions on both sides, mainly offensively, because we've seen we've seen both these offenses at points look good. It's just Oklahoma's was months ago now. Alabama kind of stretched a little bit longer than that. So you kind of don't know who you can trust offensively. We saw them play once, and neither offense was great. Alabama's just made a few more mistakes. Oklahoma's was a lot worse from an efficiency standpoint. I'm flummoxed, I guess, in the sense that I'm flummoxed that I don't have a bet, but it's kind of settled right where I think it should. And yeah, I'd still take Oklahoma if I had to say who was going to win today, but I would not be the least bit surprised if Alabama gets it together and continues their streak of never losing to a team in the year.
There you go. Oklahoma has played in the playoffs four times. They're 0-4 in the playoffs. They've never won a playoff game kind. Of course, obviously, a lot of people here in the Birmingham area and surrounding areas in Alabama love bit on Alabama, particularly when they can get them at basically a pick or maybe even some plus points. I know people were going, there's no way Bama's going to lose again to Oklahoma. They didn't think that this year during their regular season after what Oklahoma did to them last year. Well, we saw what happened. They beat them two times in a row. And I will go back at that. I love the fact that we had that first game to look at because Bama did make all kinds of mistakes. They had the three turnovers, and obviously they had the pick six. So obviously some things went against them. And Alabama actually outdueled Oklahoma almost 2-1 in total yardage. But your thoughts?
I'm sorry. I'm watching the belt to ass Western Michigan 14-0 in the first minute of the game against Kennesaw State. Defensive touchdown, and I think kickoff return for a touchdown. Anyway, so you know, Oklahoma's defense has only given up 15 touchdowns this year, I think I saw. That's pretty stout in 12 games, averaging just a little bit over one. They gave up tons and tons and tons of yards to Alabama. But looking at those stats, I mean, looking at the total at 41, you kind of have to sit here and wonder if both teams show up. I mean, are we going to have a 10-7 game? Is Alabama going to turn it over three times, give up a pick six, you know, do those kind of things? You know, this is shouldn't this be like a 10-7, 14-13, 17-14 game max?
Yeah, I mean, that's on paper. That's what it looks like. I predicted 17-16, but then I started thinking that this morning, every time I think a game's going to be a low scoring struggle, and everybody I've talked to about the game is going, you know, Alabama, it's going to just be a battle of field goals. How many times do those games end up 24-21 and just barely go over? So I'm kind of changing my tune this morning. I just have this nagging sense that more points are going to be scored than everybody thinks, because everybody thinks it's going to be this knockdown, drag out defensive struggle. What do you guys think?
Yeah, over under 40.5 in this particular game.
That's pretty low.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm actually on more on Kip's side here. It's not something I'm super confident about, but you know, it's such a short number. I think it was 47 the first time they played. That was only, what, a month and a half ago? It's gone down a full touchdown. And, yeah, the offensives have looked terrible. The thing that would scare me about an under is, you know, sometimes I don't mind diving in on an under, especially in a game like this where I do think maybe you look first half under, because I think maybe they'll be slow and feel each other out. But if both these coaching staffs, I should say, not Venables, but Arbuckle and DeBoer, I feel like they're both really good schematically. I trust them offensively a lot. They've had extra time to prepare. I would not be surprised if they have strong offensive game plans. And I go back to, it's been a long time now, but I mentioned it at the beginning that we've seen both offenses play at a high level. It's just been a while. I mean, what if both Mateer and Simpson were dealing with something, were injured? I know I've heard everyone talk about that, but it's also, it's been long enough now where that they could be a little bit healthier. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were a little more points. Again, not something ultimately I'm banging on the table and betting, but for the playoff games, I do look at the total a little bit more, and I did definitely lean over here.
How much stock do you guys put into Jam Miller? I know he was not on the initial injury report. It appears he's going to play, but still, he's probably not 100%. But everyone seems to be putting all their eggs in one basket, saying if Jam Miller's playing, they're going to win the game because they're going to have a running game. Well, they got three other five-star guys, too, that could play the rock. And for some reason, everyone's putting everything on Jam Miller. If he's healthy, Alabama's got a shot. If he's not, they're not going to run the football. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
I think he's more important to the pass block game.
Yes.
Or as important to the pass block game as he is to the running game for Alabama. Having the freshmen and the guys with lack of experience, and even watched some shows and saw the breakdown of it, and saw the massive misses when he was not in the game on the pass block. So I think it's huge. I mean, don't get me wrong. I said 17-16 kind of game. That's what everybody's expecting. I can also see this being 35-31. You know, if they show up, just like they said, I do think it is a huge key for Alabama if he is able to play, because I do think he will help in all of the pass blocks.
I'm going to say right now, there's no way it's going to be 35-32. I just mentioned Oklahoma had scored more than two offensive touchdowns in a game since October 25th. That's their offense. And look at the schedule they played. They can't
say that. Defenses can score too.
I get it. And But if Alabama,
no, they are, but their offense, yeah, their offense and Alabama's defense is you know, despite the fact they're always consistent. At least Alabama's defense is consistent; they don't get blown out anytime. But yeah, I don't think I see a 35 pointer on here. But that being said,
well, I didn't see Western Michigan scoring 14 points in the first minute and 14 seconds of this game, but Kennesaw State went, here you go. So
yeah. Well, you know, I saw that game kicked off at 10. I was going to jump ship. I said Kennesaw the other day. Now it's 14-0. I'm going to sound like, oh, yeah, I knew it all along. But I watched the Troy-Jacksonville State game a little bit the other night, and I know that was Kennesaw State's big knockdown, drag-out rival, and they looked puny against Troy, who I don't think is very good. And so I kind of changed my mind and said, I guess Western Michigan's probably going to win this game. So I'm unbelievable. It's 14-0 already.
Yeah, please don't tune us out, folks, and go watch the game. We're trying to do a live show here, so we don't want to be telling people again to go watch the college football game.
If they bail on us for Kennesaw State, Western Michigan, we must have a pretty suck-ass show.
You know what? I hope that's not the case. All right. Let's look at Dukes and Ducks, James Madison, Oregon, a game that a lot of people haven't talked about. We've gotten into some Oregon talk a little bit. Let's go around the horn real quick because I know Kip and I have already done this. I want to get Kai's and Case's thoughts on your national championship matchup. Kip, who did you have on the show yesterday as we recorded early?
I said because and you guys will be shocked that I don't like either Big Ten team, but I just think they're both suspect. So I can't go with either one. I have Texas Tech and Georgia in the finals.
Okay, I want Ohio State and Oregon. Case, who do you like in the national championship game?
You went all Big Ten, you homer.
I did.
I went Georgia.
Always a Yankee.
Oregon's not Big Ten though. Oregon's not Big Ten. They'll never be Big Ten. It's like USC is not Big Ten. They're never gonna be Big Ten.
I went Georgia, Oregon.
Georgia, Oregon. Okay, good. And what you got, Kai?
I Oregon. Interesting. I'll go Georgia, Texas Tech.
Georgia, Texas Tech.
All right. You do have in this particular game, of course, seems like almost every coach on both sides are leaving. Bob Chesney, obviously, is going to UCLA. Oregon's lost both their OC and their DC. That may have to suit them. They also have the only two teams in the playoffs that both rank in the top 10 in scoring offense and scoring defense. Now, that's a James Madison squad that ranked 121st in SOS. They only had 16 other teams that schedules were easier or harder, if you will, depending on how you look at it, than James Madison. But Case, how do you see this game right now? That line's sitting around 17.5. I know that hook's getting some people.
Tulane or
Oregon, 21.
Oregon, yeah.
Yeah, the Oregon was like 21. I've kind of talked about it before, but numbers wise, I'm just very conflicted. It'll be a good case study of first instinct versus when you really dive into the numbers, because my first instinct was Oregon should just crush this team, especially with they're getting a lot of guys back. Both DeCorian Moore, who was, you know, it's between him and Malachi Toney are the two most electric freshmen in the nation, and he missed the last month and a half or whatever playing. He's practicing this week. Evan Stewart, who was supposed to be their go-to guy coming into the season, hasn't played a snap all year, supposedly practicing in full. So Oregon's getting a lot of guys back. You think they could overwhelm them, but I don't know. Just when you dive into the data, I think James Madison's just a little bit better than people realize. I know everyone falls back on the Louisville game, which they ultimately lost, but their offense was kind of a disaster then. They hadn't fully committed to Alonzo Barrett as their starter. They were still playing former UNLV controversial quarterback Matthew Sluka, who transferred back to be with Chesney. He was still putting him in. He hadn't really decided on a quarterback. I think the offense got a lot better after that. I feel like you're getting a little bit of extra points because they looked pretty bad against Troy in the Sun Belt Championship. But I mean, these seasons are long. You're not going to be on top of your game every single week. So I honestly still kind of feel like 21.5 is a little much. I would probably lean James Madison there. I said a lot of this on the starting lineup, so I feel like I'm just repeating myself, but my dream, I think people are skeptical of Oregon and I don't think they should be. I think this team is incredible. I mean, we always hear about the eye test. Like if you watch this team, they look like they have a faster gear than any team I've seen in the nation this year. It's unbelievable. So really what I'm hoping is that they struggle and barely beat James Madison and everyone says, oh, Oregon sucks, and somehow they open like a 3-point dog to Texas Tech, because I would absolutely love them as a big dog against Texas Tech. I like Texas Tech in the interior, but I don't think Texas Tech has the athletes to keep up with Oregon, to be honest. So in my dream scenario here, Oregon looks a little shaky, and we get a little bit better line for next week. So it's going to be about a pick 'em, and I don't see either team being favored by more than 3. But if Oregon looks bad enough, I think they could be like a 3-point dog in that game, and I'd really like them in that.
That would be a great game too, because Texas Tech's defense against that offense will be a lot of fun to watch. You mentioned some of the guys come back. Gary Bryant Jr., also a wide receiver for Oregon practice this week, and also Jaden Lamar, the running back, is also back and suited up. And so this is the first time in a long time that Oregon has had everyone, or at least most of the guys, practicing and back on the football field, which is going to be difficult not only to practice for a particular game, but certainly to play if, in fact, they all play. Kip, what's your thoughts on the Oregon Ducks and the Dukes getting in this ballgame?
Yeah, I think the Dukes don't belong. You can give me all the stats you want, but they played a really subpar schedule. They only played two teams of any kind of power influence, although Washington State's not in a power conference anymore. They're in the Pac-2, which will be the Pac, whatever it is, going to be 7.5 next year. But that game was just recently at James Madison. Washington State was about a 500 team and came within an eyelash of beating them at home just 3 weeks ago. So I think that's a pretty good measure that this team doesn't belong in the playoffs, for God's sake. There was even a false report on the internet a couple nights ago that they were busing from Hendersonville, Virginia to Eugene, Oregon, which of course was BS, but I still thought that was pretty funny because that's a 39.5-hour drive straight through. So if they were pocketing the travel money, that would have been a statement for James Madison, but it's almost that ridiculous a school that they just don't belong. I can't see this being a close game. I think Oregon blows them out.
James Madison played Weber State, Louisville they lost to. They played Liberty, who's been a lot better the last couple of years. Georgia Southern, who's obviously
– they're in the Birmingham Bowl.
They are. Georgia State, Louisiana. They did beat Old Dominion, who, of course, was Case's play of the year.
That's an impressive win.
That is an impressive win. Texas State, Marshall, Appalachian State, Washington State, and Coastal Carolina. They did play – I mean, when you talk about teams that aren't perennial top or group of five schools or now group of two schools, I think of the Coastal Carolinas. I think of the Appalachian States. I think about some of those teams that knocked off, you know, Michigan years ago. I think about teams like that from that standpoint, the schedule. But you're right. They obviously, their schedule is 121st. And I don't know if they've ever seen a team that plays as fast as Oregon does. I think we're going to find out really quick. I don't see this being, you know, a 14-13 game at halftime by any stretch. I think we're going to get out fast and get after it. Kai, you got any thoughts on this game at all? Is it a big ball blowout, 21.5? Is that too much for you?
21.5 maybe. I like 21. But I'll tell you what, Joey B, I agree the potential for that to be an overtime or two overtime game. You hit us up on Twitter. X, my bad. I do like that. I think Case's water ball has got to be at least 64 ounces also.
Right at 64.
Okay.
Yeah. It doubles as a curl free weight.
But hey, we appreciate you, Joey B. I don't know what the Joey B, the real AD, is that what it says? I don't know. There's another way to read that. I really think that if Oregon is going to win, then they're going to hit the first half also. I think Oregon, the way that they cover is they come out and blitzkrieg them. That's what's got to happen for that to be. But I just don't think if it's closer than that, I think Oregon is going to sit on it late, in my opinion. I don't think if it's a 17-point game, they're going to try to score anything like that. You know, they're not Pete Carroll. They're not going to know the total or the spread and try to come in and get after it. So, you know, just a feeling. But Joey B, I think your Denver team will do fine this week also.
Let's take a look at that Tulane Ole Miss game, or the other game. That is a 17.5-point line. We've already seen that picture, too, 45-10. In that game, Tulane, of course, Reslaff, the quarterback, had just transferred. He was horrible, 5 of 17 for 56 yards. they couldn't have played really any worse in that game against Ole Miss. And obviously you're playing a team in the SEC, and so they lose by 35. That's why that line's only 17.5. My son was like, hey, they maybe I'm 35 last time. It's only 17. It's an easy play. I said, obviously, you know, that's not how it goes. But Case, what are your thoughts? You've looked at the numbers. Where'd you put this number at?
I don't have it in front of me now. I definitely had it less than what it is because I like Tulane with the points. I don't really expect them to win straight up. Let's see if I can get it. I have it right around 14, which is still a pretty big difference from earlier in the season where I thought Ole Miss should just be a touch above double digits, and that's where they closed. I got to be totally prepared to take it on the chin here, where I feel like both these group of five teams, and yeah, they're not great. They haven't, played the toughest schedules. They don't have the greatest wins. And I do think the talent level in the group of five is significantly down from some of the teams that pulled off these big upsets in the past. I just think both Tulane and James Madison are getting it piled on them a little too hard right now about how they don't belong. No one wants to bet on them. And I think because of that, their numbers have gotten a little inflated. I don't think either one's quite as bad as, we're being led to believe. So I thought getting on the other side of 17, especially, I bet it at 17, but even 17, I wish I would have waited for the 17.5. I just kind of feel like Tulane can keep it close. There's a lot of questions with Ole Miss, obviously with the new coach stepping in. I know they got Charlie Weiss Jr. back and some of the staff, but I don't know. I haven't been fully sold on Ole Miss down the stretch of the season. Maybe it doesn't matter here because they have such a big talent advantage, but I don't know. I've come around on Tulane. I didn't like them coming into the year, and then I found myself betting on them almost every week down the stretch. It mostly worked out. We'll run it back one time more. I just think it's a little too high.
Yeah, and I look at that number 5 and 9 in over-unders for Tulane. I think for some reason a lot of people look at that green wave and go, they just want to play the over. It looks like it's a 56 or 57 or 58 almost every single play. They've gone under 9 games. Actually, it'll be 5 and 8 of the 13 games they played or 12 games they played. Anyway, so it's like it goes under quite a bit when it comes to Tulane Green Wave. What's your thoughts on this particular game? Obviously, you know a whole lot about the SEC, Kip, and you're an Ole Miss fan. What's your thoughts on Tulane? Can they get inside the number?
Well, this is the most unstable coaching game in the history of college football because everybody's got their bag packed. I think we talked about the other day, the U-Haw's backed up at the back door. I think that's what we've got here again because one of them's going to lose and everybody's going to spread out for their new job. It's really insane that both these coaching staffs are totally in flux. And I want to clarify, I don't put Tulane in the same bucket as James Madison. I think Tulane plays more of a legitimate schedule in a lot more legitimate conference. So I don't discount their chances. And I think there'll be points scored in this game. I was shocked myself the first time they played because the week before the Tulane-Ole Miss game, it was Arkansas in Oxford against Ole Miss, and Arkansas scored every possession the first four or five times they had the ball. The game was like 24-21 at halftime, and in the second half, Arkansas only end up losing the game. Ole Miss could not stop them. They end up turning the ball over twice their last two drives, and Ole Miss barely eked out like a 6-point win. So I expected Tulane to score points the last time against Ole Miss, and they only put up 10, which I was really surprised to see, because at that point with Retzlaff, I thought they had a pretty productive offense, and that proved to be true as the season went on. But so I think the first game might have been an aberration. Maybe Ole Miss was awakened rudely by that Arkansas performance where they kind of mailed it in and still got away with a win. But I think there's going to be points scored in this game because I think Ole Miss's defense is pretty suspect. I don't think they have a championship defense. I know they'll score points. So I think the over is the play in this game. I think it's 47.5. I think Tulane's going to put up 24 somewhere in there. Ole Miss win this game in a kind of a shootout. I'm saying maybe 34-24, something like that. So I like Tulane and the points, and I like the over.
Ole Miss giving up 20 points a ball game this year. They're scoring 37 points a ball game, so that would certainly put it over there. And I mentioned Tulane's 4-9 in the over-under. Ole Miss actually 6-5 in over-under games, 7-4 against the spread. Let's go take a look at that A&M and Miami game. And I kind of use this game at the end because I think it's obviously going to be one of the most competitive games, along with Alabama and Oklahoma later on tonight. A&M 4-0 in one score finishes this year. And we know what Miami's done, 9-2 against the spread. Case, what's your thoughts on this particular game? Has the line moved at all?
Yeah, it's been just steady Miami money. We got as high as 4.5 when the games were announced. Now, of course, I don't have it in front of me, but I think mostly threes in Vegas, at least yesterday. Yeah, threes across the board. I think there was one, or there's one lingering 3.5 in Las Vegas. Everywhere else, 3. And I guess somehow I'm on a little bit of an island on this game. I think numbers-wise, it's right. I think I made it 3, but it's the playoffs, so we have to pick every game. And I ended up picking Texas A&M. Minus the 3. I get why everyone's on Miami, and you know, that includes, when I say everyone, not just I don't know, I've heard a lot of analysts pick them, but also people that I know bet for a living and bet at a really high level. I know some of the people that moved this line down with really getting down big chunks on Miami. I get it from a personnel perspective. I've said it time and time again, I think Miami has the better roster. I think they have the more complete players. I can't shake the fact that if this was, you know, shave one game off the schedule, shave the Texas game off the schedule, I think, and go back maybe even further than that, like when Miami lost a game, I think a lot of the year at home, Texas A&M is like a touchdown favorite in the spot. Now, I know we've got more of a sample now. They, in the end, haven't really played the greatest of schedules. They kind of got the luck of the draw in the SEC, in my opinion. And then the Notre Dame win was pretty good, but I still think people need to go back and look at that game. That was kind of the ultimate fluke that they won that, and the most blatant hold ever on the game-winning play that didn't get called. You know, I'm still salty about Notre Dame being left out, if you haven't noticed. But I just can't shake the fact that at almost any other point of the season, except for the very beginning, the last 2 months, Texas A&M would be a bigger favorite than this. So if I had to make a play here, it would be laying the 3 with Texas A&M. But this is exactly what I made it. Should be a great game. Hopefully this can – you know, go all the way going back to the 4-team playoff, the first round has just been awful. Vast majority of games have been blowouts. The spread hardly ever comes into play. So hopefully this is one where we get years of suffering out of the way and we get a classic tomorrow.
And I know Notre Dame fans absolutely hate this matchup because they lost to both these teams. You know, you also saw Miami get a hold of Notre Dame early in the season, 27-24. There's a first win of the season. You look at Bethune-Cookman, South Florida, Florida, Florida State. Louisville, they lost to, Miami did. Stanford, SMU, Syracuse, North Carolina State, Virginia Tech, and Pittsburgh. That's not really blowing the doors off either for Miami, despite the fact they're 9-2, Kip.
I'm not going to defend their schedule. I just look at the personnel they have, and I think they're capable of a lot better. And I really kind of like Carson Beck in this spot because he has been in these games and been on the big stage before, but I think Carson Beck's the key to the game. If things are going well for Miami early, Carson Beck is kind of a front runner, and that's why you look at them, their record, their spread record, because they're a front running team. If they get off to good starts and he's clicking, they can pile it up. But Carson Beck has shown in his career, when there's a little bit of adversity, he can be kind of a delicate flower and fall apart, start forcing throws. He doesn't think there's any throw he can make or he can potentially make that he can't complete. So he'll start forcing the ball, making mistakes. That's how they lost to Louisville, because the team offensively kind of pushed the panic button instead of just grinding out a win. I don't think Miami's capable of that kind of game. So he's the key to the game, in my opinion. Texas A&M is a little bit schizophrenic. They had some, I talked about it Tuesday here on the show, they had some less than stellar performances that they got away with. But Kyle Field is the biggest home field advantage in this first round by far of any of these teams. And that's a factor in the game you have to consider. Miami in a very hostile place not so much hostile. They're very welcoming fans, but they're loud and they're drilled and skilled and make a lot of racket, and it's going to be a tough environment. So the 11 o'clock factor might help Miami a little bit too, because it might not be as raucous as a night game would be there. But this is an intriguing matchup. I'm very interested to see the game. I don't know which way it's going to go, but I'm not going to be surprised either way. And Texas A&M, you know, we talk about, I always drill the schedules of the Big Ten, Big Two, but Texas A&M is just as embarrassing from an SEC standpoint. Somehow, some way, I will reiterate, they didn't play Georgia. They didn't play Alabama. They didn't play Ole Miss. They did not play Vanderbilt, Tennessee, or Oklahoma. It's almost mathematically impossible in a 16-team league to not play a single one of the top six teams, but that's what they did.
Something else to think about, and this is going to blow your mind. They were 2-5 at Kyle Field this year against the spread.
Yep. I mean, they had some real flat performances. Auburn game, they were terrible.
I just looked that up. They didn't cover against UTSA. They didn't cover against Utah State. They didn't cover against Auburn. They were 2-5 against the spread at home, and you were right. I mean, that is a place that is just – Gang Ho, really tough place to play, but they're 2-5 against the spread. That would bode pretty well for anyone that want to come in there and play a game, but it should be – I love these first-round games because I love the fact they're at home field games. The neutral site games are fun, but I think it's so important to have that home field advantage. Kai, what's your thoughts on this particular game? I guess you see an action on both sides, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you, if you bet Western Michigan today, you can just turn that game off and be happy. It's 21-0.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's 6 minutes off in the first quarter, and I got the ball back. There's some interesting things. I know you didn't ask, but I'm going to go backwards and say that Tulane Ole Miss game. I kind of am going to go with y'all and go Tulane and over. I kind of think that 17.5 they're going to stay there. One of the things that really sticks out to me, which I'm going to disagree with what Kip said. I think the toughest place to play in this first round is going to be Oregon, especially because of the nighttime and the travel for James Madison. I really think that that's going to be the
especially point. If they went on the bus.
And they had the nation's second longest home winning streak until this year. I think we give Georgia a lot of love. Oregon's home field's pretty big too. I agree.
Yeah, is the weather any better? Because I know it was really crappy there earlier in the week.
I saw it in these games changing like they are. I mean, you know, the Miami Texas A&M game opened at 51.5. The total's down to 48. And James Madison and Oregon opened at 50.5, and it's down to 46. Ton of action there on the under. And Miami and Texas A&M, you know, I have flip-flopped. I was on James Madison and Ole Miss early in the week. Now I've flipped and gone Oregon and Tulane. I flipped on Alabama and Oklahoma, I think, 14 or 15 times. And I'll probably flip four more times before 6 o'clock tonight. And then the Texas A&M Miami game. I'm flipping while we're sitting here. I'm looking at stuff. And I'm getting away from Texas A&M and moving more and more towards Miami. Partially early game, but if Miami can get out early, like you said, I totally agree. Beck is a front runner. But if they get the ball and score, I think that's going to be huge. If Miami can score, I think this game flies over the total because Texas A&M will score.
You were asking about that Oregon, by the way, a high of 50 degrees for kickoff. No rain as of right now.
Yeah. I think that's the important note. It looked rainy for most of the week, and I just called it up when Kip asked too. It looks like no more rain in the forecast, and the wind is pretty light. So my thing was I leaned over on both the group of five, the Tulane game and the James Madison game. I didn't bet either. The thing that scares me is I think highly of both coaches, and I think they're going to be smart and not run a bunch of tempo. They're going to try to run the play clock down and shorten the game. So if I absolutely had to make a bet, I would lean over on both of those. But it scares me because I think Chesney and Summerall, even though their attention is divided, I don't think they're going to do anything stupid. I think they're going to try to shorten the game wisely.
All right, we got another bowl games. We have the Idaho Potato Bowl. We have the Boca Raton Bowl. We have the New Orleans Bowl. Coming up, we have the Frisco Bowl. These are all before Christmas. We have the Hawaii Bowl coming up here. And then we'll Central Michigan and Northwestern after. But is there any other games we like to look at, because obviously we want to make money on everything. We obviously love the big games, and that's obviously makes it a lot more fun to watch some of these big games, particularly when you have some action on it. But, and a lot of people have confidence bowls going on too. By the way, I'm thanks to you, Case, I am sitting fifth out of 38 guys on my confidence bowl. And that's having a 31-pointer on Prairie View.
Prairie View.
Bastards. Bastards. If they win, man, I'm sitting there number one. And I don't know why I put a 31 on it, just because they're only one nothing. See, there you go. You just sit there and talk about tell people to turn the TV off. Prairie View, Prairie League was up 21-0, and they lost the damn
thing. Oh, God. So
pure Prairie League.
Favorites are 2-4 so far in the bowl games. So now it's about to be 3-4, unless, like you're saying, there's some massive comeback here. Because
Knock on wood. Hopefully, I'm not jinxing it. But if you've been reading, I think this is like year 16 where I've handicapped every bowl game in my column. First entry went 8-0. I have not missed a single game against the spread, and I'm kicking myself because I ended up betting all of them until here. And hopefully you were listening to our show, because I said I had a sneaking suspicion that the MAC just wasn't that bad this year, and the Conference USA is absolutely dreadful. So that's what pushed me towards picking Western Michigan. Of course, I didn't realize it had kicked off till we got on and Kai said it. So I missed betting this one, but Western Michigan's about to go up.
Oh, that kicked off at 8 a.m. your time. That's from third.
So no bets in yet, but yeah, knock on wood. I think the second part of the bowl pick'em is up on LasVegasSun.com right now. But I've had some good years. I don't know if I've ever started where I haven't missed a single game dating back to Army Navy now.
On fire. Anything else that you want to?
What you got on NC State today? What are we thinking about?
Yeah, this might be the one where it ends, because I just think everything screams NC State here, but the number just keeps coming in. So it seems like someone shaping the market really likes Memphis. I just don't know it with the coaching staff done.
Another lame duck coaching staff.
Yeah, and the way they finished the season, they look so poorly. I still like NC State, but clearly I bet it at a bad time. I bet it at 4.5. You can get you can even get a reduced juice 3.5 now. I wouldn't even be shocked with the way it's looking if it closes at 3. So if I had to guess where my run's coming to an end, it might be here, because someone with a lot of influence likes Memphis. As far as the next set of games, Tony said, the one that I loved, and it has moved a little, unfortunately, because I took +3, but I just think on the Hawaii Bowl on New Year's Eve, I think Hawaii's in a great spot. This meant everything to them to get to this bowl game. They hadn't played in a postseason game in, I think, 6 years. Chang was probably going to get fired if they didn't make a bowl this year. They just had an unbelievable offense with a local kid, Mike Alejado, who has recommitted to the program. He's so small, is the only reason why he's not at a bigger school. I think he's like 5'8", 5'9". I still thought he might leave, and it seems like he's not leaving. He's staying in Hawaii. I think this is going to be a big celebration on the island. And I don't think Cal's going to really – I mean, Cal's in between coaching staffs too. They've had some guys opt out. It's down to pick them now. I still would go Hawaii, but Hawaii +3 was a gift. I really like Hawaii.
And you get to go to Hawaii. I mean, you're on vacation if you're Cal.
Yeah, well, and you get to play on a track and field because they don't have a stadium still. It's condemned. So what a treat.
No doubt. Kip, anything that's jumping out at you on some of these bowl games?
No, I got a bad attitude about this year's bowl lineup. The lineup of teams, every game is so underwhelming. It's hard for me with the playoffs going on to really pay much attention. But I'll just let you guys entertain me with your tales of Prairie View and playing on the Hawaii track.
Go light yourself a cigar and turn the lights down low and go sit in the corner for the next few minutes, and we'll talk about some more bowl games, because there's something I want to talk about.
The other interesting one, I don't know. I mean, I did bet it too, but I've been betting them like every week. It's gone hit or miss. But everybody is playing for UNLV in the Frisco Bowl against Ohio.
Not in Frisco. It's in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Ohio fired their coach for, I don't know, wrongdoing. There's a bunch of
having an affair.
Being Marone Jr. or Sharon Moore Jr.
Yep.
Yeah.
That seems to be a trend right now.
We got a comment from Joey that says Kip is the negative Nancy of the show, LOL. But yeah, the UNLV game, I lean UNLV too, and I'm already looking ahead to next year. The Mountain West is going to be really weak with all these teams leaving the Pac-12. I think UNLV is going to have a shot at the playoff next year. I'm shocked We'll see if it still comes through. But Anthony Calandria, who was by far the best player in the Mountain West this year, their quarterback, who had done good things at Virginia too. I thought for sure that there's no way I think he's probably like a $2-3 million player in the portal. I was like, there's no way UNLV is going to have the money to keep him. And he announced this week he's staying.
Wow.
They have Jet Thomas, probably the best running back in the Mountain West, who I also thought would leave. I don't know where they're getting all the money from. He said he's staying too. So with everyone playing in this UNLV bowl game, I could see them putting it on Ohio. And next year, UNLV hasn't won a conference title in, I think, 32 years. I strongly believe next year is going to be the year that falls. So a lot of the hurdles are out of the way going to the Pac-12. And I think if UNLV brings all these guys back like they think they are, they should be really, really good next year.
Look at the whole table. Let's look at everything. We got Michigan, Texas, which is kind of intriguing. Iowa, Vanderbilt, which should be very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, those are legitimate games.
Let's get into it.
We got all week next week and multiple times to talk about them. You know, but I totally agree. I don't agree with Kip. He's leaning. I'm heavy on UNLV. I bet Hawaii plus the 3 early. I hammered UNLV. I hammered them again this morning and absolutely love them. Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. I think it's huge. And I think Christmas Eve gets you some nice change with Timmy Chang, the fighting Timmy Chang there in Hawaii. I absolutely am loving that. The other part of it is I just don't know with the opt-outs. Just looking at some of these schools like Western Michigan today, they have 4 or 5 opt-outs or 4 or 5 kids that are in the transfer portal, but Western Michigan allowed them to play and finish the season. Go imagine that, actually finishing something, you know, you signed up to do. They just scored again, but missed the extra point. So it's 27-0.
That could be big.
Yeah. There's some great games. I mean, how much does the line change though in the Missouri, Virginia game for 12-27 now that, Bo Fribula said, see ya, I'm out of here. Just a random thought out there.
Where is that game? Yeah, to be honest, I put all the numbers on it first, and then I kind of go as my column when I really dive into who's playing and who's not. So I hadn't even heard the Pribula news. I haven't jumped back in on this game. Let's see. We're at 4 now. Open 7. So I guess a 3-point move. I don't know exactly when it happened. Like I said, I haven't deep dove into this game yet. But
yeah, he announced it 2 days ago.
Okay. Well, yeah, I do. I didn't bet anything on this game based on my initial number. I thought 7 was fair with Pribula bailing. I mean, yeah, that would seem to be my snap reaction is it might be worth a little bit more than 3. So you're just getting my really off the cuff take here, but I still see a 4.5 as of right now. If you made me make a bet on that game uninformed, not you doing my usual due diligence, I would think 4.5 with Virginia if they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, there are some really good matchups, and I'm sitting here looking at all of them, including your Tennessee Volunteers taking on the Fighting Illini coming up here on the 30th. We've got that game coming up. We'll be at Arizona State and Duke, which should be kind of interesting. Nebraska, Utah, Navy taking on Cincinnati, Wake Forest, and Mississippi State's not particularly advertising. Arizona SMU could be kind of fun to watch. But again, it's like any time, like this morning, you know, turning this football game on, a lot of people wouldn't even know what's going on. But the fact that we have college football on at 10 o'clock in the morning, I love it. I mean, bring it on, brother. That's fantastic. I mean, I love that. And I love the fact that that's one of the reasons I love going to Las Vegas, because the games do start 2 hours earlier. You could be betting games at 9 o'clock.
In this case, 4 hours earlier in Las Vegas.
It's absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love it. So, all right, we'll keep it wide open if you guys want to go back and talk some college football at any point during the show. We do want to talk about some pros as well, because we're coming down to the end of the season, and it's gotten we're seeing the change of the guard a little bit. And again, a lot of great matchups, including Packers, Bears, which would be just a fun game to watch. We have a pair of 7-7 teams still playing for their playoff lives, and the Panthers and the Buccaneers, which would be, you know, I don't really mind the records, man. When you got 2 or 3 more weeks left, and you're still playing for playoffs, man, I just love to see how these teams react. Chargers, Cowboys, looks like the Cowboys are out. There's only one way they can make it in right now. Yeah.
They got a 1% chance. They're out.
They have to have about 15,000 different things to happen to them for them to get a chance to get in. Then you got the Jags and the Broncos, a 10-4 and a 12-2 team playing together. And the Steelers and Lions, a pair of 8-6 teams. I think that's an interesting team from the standpoint that I think a lot of people thought the Lions were going to be better than they actually are. They're playing for their playoff lives as well. Then they have the Steelers, who I'm not sure what the over-under was on wins for Aaron Rodgers, probably first in last season, 8.5. So this could put them over the total right now. So for a lot of people that thought that Aaron Rodgers still had something left in the tank, I guess he's proving that right. What's your thoughts on some NFL action this weekend, guys?
I guess starting with the Detroit-Pittsburgh game, it's gotten a little expensive now, and I think I already talked about it Tuesday, as I kind of like Detroit. I don't know. I feel like some of their losses are excusable. Pittsburgh, I'm still not totally sold on, although that was a strong performance against Miami. It really seems like their defense has come along. The offense has just kind of been middling all year, kind of a little bit below average. But the defense was really bad to start the year. If you remember that the Jets game in week one, where the Jets looked like the Chiefs from 2020, and then they had several instances like that. Now TJ Watt gets a punctured lung, and they're still fine. So I think they've really come along defensively. Also, I believe Pittsburgh can lose each of the next two games, and as long as they win week 18, they're still in the playoffs. So I'm sure they're still preparing hard and it all. You're not going to get a subpar performance anyway. But I think this game means a little bit more to Detroit. At Detroit, their offense has always stepped up a notch. So I'd lean Detroit in that one. I'm trying to think. I mean, we got two games on Saturday. I know a lot of people will be tuned in to the college football playoff game, but should be interesting. Washington kind of had a now that's up to 7. I probably wouldn't bet it at 7. Washington had a resurgence last week, which I liked. I was on, if you read my column, but I feel like it kind of crashes back to earth this week. Philadelphia got some things right, and they have just crushed this Washington defense time and time again. I think the last five meetings I put in my column this week, I think they're averaging like 38 points per game. I really do think it is a matchup thing of Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni against this Dan Quinn scheme. So I would expect them to roll. I laid 5.5, though. It's now at 7. That's a little bit tougher. And I can't believe it, because never at any point of the year do I think Chicago is superior to Green Bay. I think Green Bay was really kind of a sleeping giant at one point. Just everybody is hurt now. I mean, Tucker Kraft had been the best tight end in the NFL. He got hurt, a month and a half ago. And you're like, okay, well, they have all these guys coming back. They'll be able to figure it out. Then they lose Christian Watson again last week. I know he's probably going to be a game-time decision. Maybe he could end up playing. But defensively, they lose Devontae Wyatt in the middle. Of course, Micah Parsons tears his ACL. I mean, this team is just totally not the same with the number of injuries they have at every level. So I actually bet Chicago money line. Of course, now it's another one that moved. I bet Chicago plus 115. Now they're a 1.5, 2-point favorite. But I've been Mr. Green Bay all year. They've had some puzzling performances. I still really thought they were a Super Bowl contender and one of the best teams in the NFL. But I just wonder if we've reached the point of no return with these injuries. So, God, this is another one that's moved, though. I don't know if I could lay points with Chicago. Maybe we get positive news on, like, Christian Watson. This goes back to pick'em or plus money. I would say it would just be Chicago or pass for me.
I got a text here from Jeremy in Inverness. You can also go info at tonycurryradio.net or wherever you can find us here, of course, on our YouTube page, not to mention, of course, on our X page as well. Thoughts on Tua Tagovailoa being benched. We'll go to our Alabama favorite, Kip. What's your thoughts on Tua Tagovailoa? I liked what he had to say afterwards, saying that he's going to be there. It sucks that he's back going from the starting quarterback all the way to third. But what's your thoughts on Tua?
Well, I mean, I think that might be a little bit of an overreaction. I mean, I know he's thrown a lot of picks, but Miami was on a good roll until they went to the Ice Bowl the other night in Pittsburgh. So I don't really know if it's the time to pull the plug there, but, we'll see. I know he's thrown 15 picks, and that's outrageously high, but they had gotten back in the race until that game the other night, and so I don't know if that's really the right move. Maybe you're exploring your options for later on. But I think Tua still has the skill set. I don't know, with all the concussions and all the turbulence in his career, where his mindset is right now. And that's not a sly reference to how many times he's been hit in the head, but he's clearly not the same player. But anyway, with that all said, I think we talked about it Tuesday. To me, the Detroit Lions have had a playoff style matchup every week. Their schedule has been just brutal. It seems like every week they're playing a top level team. Now they're at home in a game they have to have. The Steelers, I still don't really buy them. I wish the Lions were a little bit less than 7. Maybe they'll get down into the 6 range or whatever, but I really think Detroit's due to have a game where they blow somebody out, and I think this could be one of those spots. And I'm sympathetic to the Colts as well. The Colts were 8-2 a couple weeks ago. Now they're 8-6. I mean, 4 losses in a row with some issues. And of course, Phillip Rivers, 73 years old, starting last week. I guess he's going to start again. I hear that Anthony Richardson was cleared to practice. That's an interesting wrinkle, because I mean, talk about the guy who's completely forgotten. But they're hosting the 49ers. They're at home. I'm not totally sold on the 49ers either. I think the Colts could have a bounce back here. I'm kind of leaning Indianapolis. I don't think they were all Daniel Jones. Look at the effort they made at Seattle last week. And if you're a Seahawk fan, could you have had 2 more thrilling wins than they've had in the last 2 weeks up there? But the Colts kicked a 60-yard field goal to take the lead with 40 seconds left. And I guess their coaches are still in the 1960s. You're playing 25 yards off receivers in the prevent you from winning defense. They give them 2 plays and let them line up for a 55-yarder, which in this day and age is like a chip shot. You can't play defense like that anymore, guys. This just in, these guys can make it from 60 yards. So that was a ridiculous loss by the Colts. That was, as Vince Dooley used to say when Georgia lost, that was poor coaching. And that was exactly what
that was. Times do we have to see that? That's a great point. How many times do we have to see? We see in college too. How many times are we going to see this defense give up a late?
They're playing 25. They're giving teams 2 20-yard free plays because the thinking is you got to get down to about the 35 to make a field goal. That isn't the case anymore. You get to the 45 and they can knock it through. So
yeah, I saw they got that target line. I forget which game I was watching yesterday. There was a target line that was at the 47-yard line.
Oh, it's crazy. The Dallas guy, it's his own 45. So although he missed a couple last week. But anyways, that's the 2 teams that kind of jump out at me this week. I like the Colts and the Lions.
What are some of the others? In case I know you look a lot of the numbers, and certainly the Ravens are not doing what – something's going on with Lamar Jackson. I know they're 7-7. Since they're in the North, they obviously have a chance to win the division, blow the game out. But what are some other teams you're kind of surprised by? Maybe statistically speaking, you kind of saw – a little around the curve before the rest of us did. Did you see the KC falling apart before they actually did not make the playoffs? What did you see halfway through the season, perhaps, the rest of us didn't see?
Well, I absolutely did that. Hopefully you listened to us at the beginning of the year, because I said that I thought Kansas City not to win the AFC West was a great bet. I was on Denver to win the AFC West. I wrote about how I thought this was going to be the year it falls apart for the Chiefs. But unfortunately, I didn't completely stick with it because I felt like sentiment dropped too far on the Chiefs. So I didn't buy off any of the futures, luckily. All those should cash. But I have bet the Chiefs the last several weeks. I don't know. I mean, I really think their underlying numbers this year, when healthy, are probably even better than last year's, which I know will make people's head explode because they went 15-1 or whatever. But just look at the way they've lost these games this year compared to the way they won the games last year. I mean, the NFL, the margins are just so slight. And all that being said, I think they're done now. I mean, they're down to like 3rd string offensive linemen. They have all these guys banged up. They have no incentive to play any of these veterans. I think they're going to shut them down and get ready for next season. I bet Tennessee plus 3.5 this week. There's still some 3s out there, which I guess is fine too. I think they're going to be awful down the stretch because they don't – I mean, they're out of the playoffs. They've never been in this situation in like 10-plus years before any of these guys were even on the team. So, I did see that one coming. Another team that I wrote about this week, kind of in a similar position to Kansas City, not quite the height of success, although they did get 1 Super Bowl, was I was relatively down on Tampa Bay coming into the year, and I felt stupid when they got off to a hot start. But now, I mean, they're flirting with disaster.
They're cratering.
If they lose this week at Carolina, which I would lean Carolina in that game as well, their division streak could be over. They have the I think the third longest division streak in the NFL. The Chiefs had the longest, which is over. The Bills, the second longest. Theirs is teetering. Obviously, they're still a game behind the Patriots, although they could still win. And the Buccaneers, that they need to beat the Panthers probably these next two times. I don't love that game. I could see Tampa getting it back together, but I think they're like 1-6 in their last seven games against the spread, and just seems like they have a lot of issues. Todd Bowles calling out the team. It seems like there's some dysfunction there. So Tampa Bay is another staple of the NFL postseason recently that I'm not ready to declare them dead yet, but your eyes got to be kind of on them. Is this the next disaster? And it could be a kind of unforeseen coaching opening if we keep going in this direction in the offseason.
The Bucs 5-9 against the spread on the season, and we're watching Kansas City. I think a lot of people don't know what they're doing. They look at that Kansas City line and go, wow, why is it only three?
What a bad division.
Really is. Michael Leach's guinea pig, Gardner Minshew, of course, the backup quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, will get a chance. And sometimes he's amazing, and sometimes he just looks like he shouldn't be playing football. It's just a matter of, you know, whether he's in a good mood or not, I guess. But sometimes he looks like he puts up some wonderful numbers like he did at Washington State. Sometimes he doesn't at all. But it should be fun to get down to the nitty-gritty, and certainly at the end of the season. It won't be too long before we're going to be getting into playoff action and some Super Bowl action. It's going to be fun to see who can make it in and who cannot. And God willing, we'll figure out the whole playoff scenario and everything else that goes along with it. It's always interesting because there's always going to be a team that needs like 16 things for it to happen to make it in, and it does. And it always gets down to that last weekend where a team, all they got to do is win the football game and they make the playoffs and they can't seem to pull the trigger on it. It just happens almost every single year. Watch the red zone. You'll know what I'm talking about. All right. Let's talk some college hoops, professional hoops, NHL hockey. We always do that towards the end of the show for folks who want to make some money on some other different sports outside the two big sports are going right now. Kaya, what's your thoughts on what's going on? I know most of those, the CM Newton things and things like that are kind of going by the wayside. We don't have a lot of these big tournaments anymore because everyone's getting into conference play. So we're not seeing those monster games, although we are seeing some good ones. But what's your thoughts on college hoops and how we've been hitting them?
I will say that, a lot of people are opting out of this. There's a lot of good games this weekend. I mean, in Georgia, you got St. John's, Kentucky, and Ohio State, North Carolina. New Jersey, you got Houston and Arkansas. Indianapolis, you got Auburn, Purdue. Madison Square Garden, you got Duke and Texas Tech tomorrow. We're looking at four or five basketball games tonight. They're all under the radar games that are really, really light. I'll tell you what, and I do like some totals and some team totals in the NFL as well. But you know, if you're a kid, which no kids are watching this, I understand that. But man, if there is a reason to be a football player and play in these bowl games, it's something like what's happening for Western Michigan. You got Voorhees, their leading rusher besides their quarterback, out for the game. Their backup running back, Buckley's probably making himself some money right now. Seven carries for 172 yards in this game. Chevy might be getting some NIL money next year, might be coming on doing that. So, hey, you know, but that's also the reason why I still love college football. Even with the NIL and all the bullshit we're putting up, is because you see stuff like this, even in a meaningless bowl game where a kid that doesn't get a ton of carries, didn't get a ton of yards, as the backup running back comes in and starts. I mean, it's second quarter, 27-0. He's on the sideline on the bike because he already got 170. The MVP wrapped up.
Wow. By the way, before we go, I'm glad you brought that up too, because I wanted to ask Case, I know that the Knicks aren't going to have a cup, or they're not going to hang a banner for winning the cup.
Cup they created for LeBron, and nobody cares.
No, it's brilliant. I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it. I'm going, wow, it was sold out. It was unbelievable. It was a fun game to watch, and it's all about the money. And the players are playing their asses off because $550,000. They've done a masterful job. Every other sport out there should look at the same thing and do some type of in-season playoff thing because it worked. It's the third season, so. These guys genuinely look like they're excited. And for some of these guys making $200,000-$300,000 a year, that's quite the push.
Well, I've gone every year. You've tripped into a passion for me. I absolutely love the NBA Cup. I think the NBA minimum is like $1.3 million now. So no one's making that few. But the guys at the end of the bench are – if you watch the guys at the end of the bench, they just absolutely love this. And anyone that watches the NBA can tell you the intensity of these games is so much bigger than the regular season. These guys want to win. I think it's total bullshit that, sorry, I try not to curse. I can't believe the Knicks won't hang the banner. The NBA wants them to do it. This is all just a Dolan's long pissing match with Adam Silver. They're trying to be the bigger man and say, we're not going to do it, even though the Lakers and the Bucks did it. Well, the Knicks haven't raised anything in their arena since the 70s. So
yeah,
I guess they're
true.
Lost.
That's true. Why would they start now? Maybe that's why they're doing it.
It seems like the Cup hasn't really, I know from an American viewing perspective, it seems like it hasn't really caught on as much as you think from the public. But I got to tell you, it is gigantic internationally. I mean, this is the way international sports, especially soccer, are set up. They have multiple competitions going on at the time. Like I said, I've covered every year here, and I can't believe how much Asian media, European media, it was a little bit less this year because international tourism's down a lot. But the international interest in this is like way, way higher than I think people realize. So I see people making fun of the NBA. Oh, they're losing money on this. What a bad idea. People just could not be more wrong. This is going extremely well for them, except for the one area where I think they'd like is the American sports fan to get a little more into it. I feel like if people just get educated on what's going on and drop their
confusions,
I feel like they would, because the games are a lot better and the players care. So I think for the most part, it's been a big success, and it's probably going to move out of Las Vegas next year, which I hate. I wrote a column that it should stay, but I'm a big fan of the NBA.
Where are they talking about moving it?
They haven't given my one hope is that last year Adam Silver went into this whole thing too and ended up still being here, but he said that Amazon wants to go to historic college venues. So I don't know how these college venues
want
the championship, only the championship. They're going to have home court all the way to the semifinals, but I don't know if they try to go to Cameron Indoor or Fieldhouse or something for the championship.
That's a weird thing. I'm pretty sophisticated when it comes to following sports, but I don't even know how I know they like group them in like, are they, I don't want to say group them in groups, but how are the preliminary rounds of that determined of who you're competing with in terms of your bracket or whatever?
Yeah. So it's a group. They do like a random draw, just like kind of the World Cup at the beginning of the season.
So it's not geographically based. It's just white.
Yeah, it still is East and West, but it's totally random of who you get in. Well, not totally random. It's based on your record last year. And then they have the group, you have round robin, and then it's an 18 bracket, single elimination. So, yeah, sorry. I feel like I'm hogging this topic, but I love the NBA. Hope this catches on here.
I'd like to know more about it because I see the little notation at the bottom of the screen, NBA Cup game or whatever, and I'm going, what determines that? But I will promise to pay more attention to it if you guys promise me that next year when the World Cup is here, I don't have to talk about soccer.
You got it, brother.
Ty hates the NBA Cup so much he logged off.
I know, right? K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Check out the site. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We're back at you Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Central Time. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you, man.
See you, guys.
Joey B.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.